Your SteveJonesShow.com podcast audio is loading now. Today's SteveJonesShow.com podcast audio is sponsored by Purdy Insurance, Market Street, Sunbury, and online at PurdyInsurance.com.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Don't forget, we're an hour away from IndyCar today. No sponsor.
I thought you were.
No.
I must have read the wrong
memo.
So
people come up to you and ask when I stopped liking sports. I love sports.
No. They laughed when I say, when did you stop becoming a fan?
Didn't you just hear Jason Stark?
Yes. But he never said he was a fan before. He just said he covers it, but the only thing he's really a fan about right now is Syracuse.
Right. Which is fine. We'll talk about this in a moment. First of all, we go to Pittsburgh. We bring in the outstanding columnist, Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, Ron Cook. Cookie, it's great to have you on board with us again.
I'm doing good, Steve. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing very well. Very well. So let's. I want to get to the Pens first of all. What's the latest you hear on Sid?
Well, Sid actually met with the media today. I was doing my own radio show here in Pittsburgh, so I didn't get to go over and hear him. But still not on solid food yet. He's having trouble maintaining his weight, but sounded pretty optimistic. You're going to meet with the doctors later in the week. I guess he hasn't really, they haven't allowed him to exert himself yet. It's going to be a big test. They're worried about an infection coming in, and they don't want that. So. Everyone I talk to around the organization is still very hopeful he'll be ready for the playoffs, but I don't know if it's going to be much before then or not.
Ron, what's it been like to be around a team that at least has made moves down the stretch with the idea that this is they think it's this year? But what's it been like just to see a team make the moves that they have made along the way, and what does it do for a fan base when they do that?
No, I don't think there's any question, Steve, and here the Pirates are kind of just the opposite. It always seems to be next year, 5 years down the road with them. And the Penguins are going for it. I mean, Ron Burkle is the money guy from California, Mario Lemieux. They've taken on extra payroll with the trades that they made. And they're going for it. And, I mean, it's going to be a disappointment. You hate to say cup or bust, but I think they probably have to get to the finals with this group and then take your chance because they're built to win. Now, they've had some amazing run of injuries here, not just Crosby. They announced today that James Neal was out indefinitely with a concussion, and he was a 40-goal man last year and was on kind of the same pace this year. Paul Martin has been a terrific defenseman for him this year. It was terrible last year, but he's had a great year. He broke his hand blocking a shot. He could miss the start of the playoffs. So they're down three really key guys now, and that doesn't even include Chris Letang, who's missed the last handful of games. But it looks as if he may be back on this trip at some point. So it's a very fragile thing, as you know, in sports, Steve, especially in a physical sport like hockey, guys get hurt. And that's the thing that could stop them. But there's no doubt they're going for it. They're built to win it, and we'll see if they can deliver.
Yeah, you and I both know that every time you're building for the future, you never get there. I mean, you're always building for the future.
Well, that seems to be what the prior strategy is, unfortunately.
Yeah. And again, they're off to the exact same start they were off to last year. Same scenario. You know, lose two out of three at home, go to Los Angeles, get swept. Same pattern as last year, except this team can't score.
Well, last year's team couldn't either. I mean, their months of April and May offensively was just horrendous. And then the pitching kept them alive for a while afloat. And then the offense turned it on in June and July, and they went on their streak and ended up 16 over 500. So I'm careful before the epic collapse. I'm careful not to write them off. It's only been six games. They're 1-5. As you said last year, they were 2-6 after the first eight. But I suspect the pitching is not going to be as good as it's been the first time through the rotation, and I would expect the hitting to be much better. Now, what that's going to mean in terms of a potential winning record, I don't see it happening. I don't think the pitching is that good, but six games in, you know, you had 156 to go.
Yeah.
So I'm a little hesitant to say they're going to stink all year, but right now the bats certainly are lousy. There's no question.
Steeler draft, NFL draft's coming up. What are some areas when you watch them that you just know they look, you know, over the seven rounds, they need to start filling gaps? Where are those gaps?
Well, Steve, everywhere but quarterback, I would say, and some people think they need to draft at least a potential replacement for Ben, if not his heir apparent.
Yeah.
I believe that they're, as long as they have Roethlisberger, he's a franchise quarterback for me. I try to get pieces around him. I don't care about his backup. I figure if he goes down, things aren't going to be good anyway. They were an 8-8 team. They have holes everywhere. They could use help at defensive end. Breck Diesel isn't getting any younger. They don't have James Harrison anymore. They need an outside linebacker. The two safeties, Ryan Clark and Troy Polamalu, are in their 30s. They're not going to be around forever. You always need help on the offensive line. They lose Mike Wallace, their best receiver. He's gone, so you lose Mendenhall in the backfield. They don't have a feature running back. They got a lot of holes. So the best athlete available when they pick 17, I would think, would fill any number of holes. I can't say they need one any more than another. They have a lot of issues. And if they didn't have Roethlisberger, I would think the next year is going to be just terrible. But when you have a quarterback in the NFL, you always have a chance. And I think he's one of the best.
Yeah, I think he's one of the best, too. Hey, can you remember going into a draft, you know, feeling the way you feel right now about the draft?
No, and I mean, I hear Art Rooney II and Mike Tomlin and Kevin Colbert all say the same thing. You know, this isn't any different than any other year. Well, it is. I mean, they've lost a lot of guys, and they're still, you know, Casey Hampton is still out there, a free agent. I don't think he's going to be back. They're losing guys, and they got to replace them. And so I can't remember a draft where they've had so many needs. No, Steve.
Yeah, and that's unusual. Pitt now is going to start making that transition to the ACC. I mean, now that, you know, we see Syracuse, they're out of it after being eliminated the other night. So now they start thinking ACC. Louisville will think a year from now about that. How do you feel about what is the demise overall of the Big East as we know it, and about the ACC move?
Well, you know, it's two parts for me. I'm extremely saddened that the basketball is over as we know it. I love the Big East basketball. Yeah. I've always maintained if I only could cover one thing a year, it would be the Big East basketball tournament in Madison Square Garden. It is by far my favorite event of the year. So I'm saddened from that standpoint. As far as football goes, I couldn't care less. I think the Big East has been bad in football for a number of years. I've always maintained, much to the chagrin of Pitt fans, that there is no Big East without Penn State in it, and I truly believe that. So Pitt had to leave the Big East. If football is the future, as we all know, and it had to land somewhere, and I think it landed in a pretty good spot. We'll see how Pitt manages. They had a tough week last week, losing the running back, Russell Schell, transferring after his freshman year,
right,
and then losing the big kid in the basketball team going to the NBA, Steven Adams, after 1 year, all in the same 24-hour period. It was a pretty good kick to the Pitt programs. But I think the basketball program will do just fine in the ACC. I'm not sure about football. It's been a long time. It always seems like it's something with football. I point out this stat that I find hard to believe. They haven't lost fewer than three games in a season in 32 years.
Wow.
The 1981 Pitt team was, 11-1. And they've lost at least three games in every season since 1981. That's a long time. That's a lot of mediocrity for me.
Yeah.
And this Schell kid leaving, you hear stories that he was a handful, that it's good for the long term of the program that he's gone, and that may be. But it's certainly, there's no way of spinning it as good for the short term of the program, because it isn't.
No. And I mean, football-wise, they landed in a great spot. But let's face it, Big East basketball, Madison Square Garden, nothing replaces that. I mean, that's something that was a must-see, must-be-around event.
Absolutely. And that's because of the venue, Steve. But, I mean, think about how good the ACC in basketball is going to be now.
Oh, yeah, it's off the charts.
Louisville in 2 years with Syracuse and Pitt. and Notre Dame, don't forget Notre Dame, to a league that already has Duke and Carolina and Miami and NC State. And I mean, it's going to be an unbelievable basketball league. I'm just going to miss the Garden, that week in New York at the Big East tournament. That to me is what made that so special.
Yeah, without question. Thoughts on Louisville and Michigan tonight?
Well, it's probably good that you ask. I'll do your listeners a service because whoever I pick, they can go opposite and might do well for themselves because I'm always wrong. But, I saw Louisville at the Big East tournament. I covered it this year, and I saw the amazing comeback in the second half against Houston. And they played defense like nobody else. I like Louisville in this game tonight. I always like to tell people that I'm a Northwestern grad. I went to school in the Big Ten, and if you ever go to school in the Big Ten, you're basically taught from day one to hate Michigan because their fans are so arrogant. So I guess I'll be happy if Louisville wins. I don't really care. I'm just going to watch it and hope for a good game. But it's not easy to like Michigan fans. I don't know if you agree or not, but you've been around too. It's not easy to like Michigan fans.
Yeah, it's They do feel entitled. How about that?
Arrogant, whatever you want to do. Condescending, that'll work too, right? Not offending those in your Michigan audience out there, but you know what? Too bad, because the truth hurts sometimes.
Robert Morris doesn't make a ripple, obviously, on the Pittsburgh sports scene. It really doesn't. The win over Kentucky, sure, that was fun. Had you heard anything from anybody about Mike Rice when he was at Robert Morris?
Well, I mean, you knew he was a nut. His sideline decorum is hideous. I mean, he's just crazy.
Right.
But no, I never heard anything, even whispered about his practices. We've since had players at Robert Morris come out and said he didn't do that stuff at Robert Morris. I don't know. I wasn't there. I guess the Robert Morris AD has done some investigating and was supposed to meet with the media today or tomorrow. I don't believe he has done that today as of yet. So we'll be interested to hear what he has to say. I mean, I like Mike Rice. I covered his father when his father coached at Duquesne, and he was very intense. But I never saw the physical verbal abuse, but I wasn't at their practice, so I don't know. It offends me a little bit that, he's an intense guy. That gives you the right to treat somebody like garbage. I don't buy it.
Nope.
There's a lot of intense coaches out there that still know how to treat their players. I was very disappointed to see the video. I know Mike Rice is embarrassed by it. Whether it happened to Robert Morris or not, I can't say, but everything I've been told is no.
And the other thing I never want to hear is that there's, quote, a fine line. There is not a fine line. It is obvious between how you conduct yourself. You can be tough on your players. You can be aggressive with your players in certain ways that is always safely on one side of the line. It's obvious what the line is.
Well, I couldn't agree more. And, I don't mind a little foul language and curse words. I can handle that. I don't like the homophobic slurs that he used at his players.
No doubt.
I understand the uproar that caused on the Rutgers campus. And, I mean, I don't see how he couldn't have been fired. But I also don't see how that university president didn't see that tape whenever he first had it in December. The AD took the fall here as he should. I'm not sure the university president shouldn't go as well.
Right. I agree with you. I don't see that when something of this magnitude comes out that you don't take 5 minutes. I mean, you can't be that busy. 5 minutes.
I agree.
Ron, Cookie, always a pleasure, my friend. I'll tell Hammer you said hi. I'll be seeing him probably the end of the week, so I'll let him know you said hi.
Absolutely. One of my all-time favorites. Please do, Steve. It's always a pleasure to join you. Great day.
Hey, thanks, Cookie. Appreciate it. Ron Cook, Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. How'd you like his stuff on the draft, huh?
Well, he is 100% correct. I can't remember a year where there have been more needs for one reason or another than there are this year.
It's going to be exciting to find out which player they think they should pick.
At this point, as long as it's not a quarterback in the first round, I think they're fine. I mean, he's right. Casey Hampton is not coming back. I can't see them putting any money together to keep him. The running back situation is a mess. A quarterback is the only slot right now that has a stable starter, but he's an injury-prone starter.
Look, he's one of the top five or six quarterbacks in the game.
No question.
Even hurt, he is.
No question. But he's also a guy that, as you mentioned last week, that you can't have an adequate backup, that you cannot afford, that you can't afford not to have an adequate backup.
No question. You know, he's been in the league now 10 years. It's a lot of hits he's absorbed.
You know, I didn't think it was that long until I looked that up a couple of days ago and the stats and everything. I didn't realize he had been in the league 10 years.
That's why I'm here.
Well, I'm glad. I, for one, am glad.
Really?
I was just trying to be nice and polite.
Okay. It's like talking to your kid. All right. We'll come back with more in a moment. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Have that Hilscher's General Store hotline open at 1-800-795-9565. Powered by Hilscher's General Store, 7 miles south of Sealands Grove on routes 11 and 15. Love to hear those calls here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When you buy insurance, it's serious business. Because if something happens and you don't have the right coverage, you're out of luck and maybe out of business. So if you need insurance, business, home, auto, or flood, ask your agent about Selective. No gimmicks, just great coverage and great response.
Get to know your local Selective agent, Purdy Insurance, on Market Street in Sunbury or at purdyinsurance.com. Find out what Purdy Insurance can do for you.
Ready for a quality pre-owned vehicle? Well, get them before they go to auction at Sunbury Motors. Go to sunburymotors.com and click on pre-auction blowout. With so many great deals in bloom, you'll be thinking spring.
Like a 2009 Ford Econoline cargo van E150 with the lowest price promise. So call for a price. 888-536-8017. 2012 Ford Fiesta 5-door hatchback SE, $12,999. 2006 Lexus LS 430, $25,588. Like new, 2011 Lincoln MKX 4-wheel drive, $31,488. And a 2010 Ford Roush Mustang 427R, 5-speed, under 10,000 miles, just $34,995.
All come with a Carfax report and our lowest price promise. Pre-auction blowout. 24/7 at sunburymotors.com, at the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at our dealership, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sunbury Motors, a tradition of trust since 1915.
Here we go. Cheer to Steelers, black and the gold. Here we go. It's time to Pittsburgh's heart.
Well, this is the one bonus of the Steelers not doing well. You don't have to hear that hideous song.
You know they're going to have to update it because I think there will be one player that will still be in it from last year.
Maybe. David Jones tomorrow, Harrisburg Patriot News. Okay?
All right.
Yeah. All right. Make sure you're happy.
I'm always happy.
Okay, a very confusing statement.
I'm always happy.
I found that statement to be confusing.
You know, this has to be your favorite week, one, if not the favorite in the top three favorite sports weeks of the year for you. You've got the Final Four finishing up with the national championship tonight, then the Masters starting at the end of the week. I mean, baseball's going on. This must be like at least top five.
Spring football practice?
Yeah.
So you got that?
I mean, this has to be in your top 5 weeks of the year.
I enjoy this week very much. I actually had a chance to go to the Masters last year, and it got shelved because of a plane problem.
I remember that.
I could have gone to the NCAA basketball Final Four Saturday. I got a call Thursday afternoon right before the show, wanted to know if I wanted to go. I turned it down. So I had a lacrosse banquet that I was emceeing on Saturday, which I had committed to 6 weeks ago, and I wasn't going to leave them hanging.
But you know, with the Masters starting this week, you know what you're going to hear a lot of is...
No, you're going to hear a lot. It's Tiger's turn. That's what you're going to hear a lot of. Look, the bottom line for Tiger Woods is going to be this, putting. The last tournament he played in was the Arnold Palmer tournament, and he had gone through a stretch of 62 holes where he had 54 putts of under 10 feet. 54 of the 62 putts he had under 10 feet, 54, 62, under 10 feet, he made them. If he putts like that, he can win the Masters. And he'll be the favorite going in. Because at Augusta, even though it's a little bit tighter than it used to be, there's rough when there didn't used to be any, it still has escapability to it. So he can drive the ball in a variety of places poorly off the tee and get away with it. The question is on the undulating, very green National, he can roll birdies and obviously conquer fives in such a way that gives him a cushion in this. And that's what it comes down to. It's going to be his putting that's going to be the key as to whether he wins a fifth green jacket or not. Off the tee is almost going to be irrelevant for him. He has the ability and creativity not a trick, especially at Augusta. I mean, there are moments that you can hit the ball poorly and you're in the pine straw. Two of the great shots we've ever seen in the Masters in the last 10 years have been both on 13, Phil Mickelson and Bubba Watson. Pine straw in trouble coming up with miraculous shots. You can make those shots at Augusta National. That's what makes it a great tournament to watch. Greens are very tough, course is long, but there are openings on a golf course where if you're not perfect, that's why Seve Ballesteros could compete and do well there. He could not at the U.S. Open. The Augusta National is a very tough course, but has openings of forgiveness in it. And it's that openings of forgiveness the fans love. They love to see those great shots where there's at least a possibility something great could happen from a very tough spot. In the U.S. Open, you're in a tough spot. Everybody in the club knows you're cooked fried. At the U.S. Open, being in the rough is like being in second place in an IndyCar Formula One style race. You're never advancing.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back to the Steve Jones Show. Steve of the Sunbury Motor Studio, and the toll-free line's open at 800-795-9565. The 1986 Masters, that's how the CBS promoted it, with Jim Nantz. And I can't imagine the Masters without Jim Nantz. Hello, friends. I mean, and the music. CBS, you have to admit, with maybe football being the weakest of all the sports they do on a regular basis, they have some of the best music. I mean, you have the Masters, you have the NCAA tournament in basketball. Football is probably the weakest of the bunch as far as their music is concerned.
Really?
You don't think so? I think their football is the weakest.
Okay,
of the bunch.
Here comes the part you don't like.
All right, go.
I don't care. You can play all you want. I like the way CBS does golf.
Yes.
CBS, the Frank Cherkinian method of golf, and Barrows picked up on it.
No, wait, what is that?
Shot to shot to shot to shot to shot. No dead time. Okay? Let's go to 13. Here's Tiger Woods. Woods is right now at five over par. Suddenly he's brought himself back, so it'll be a 5-iron. Brings it to within about 10 of the hole. Let's go to 16. Here at 16 over the leg, Bubba Watson. He's going to use a 7-iron. It's 161. I mean, it's shot to shot to shot. NBC has dead time. I don't need to see Tiger walking in the fairway. Show me something that's going on. CBS is very action-based.
Did NBC have that theory before they picked up the Golf Channel as part of their Comcast deal?
That hasn't changed.
Okay. I wasn't sure if it was the Golf Channel that did that and NBC picked it up because they were using the same people, or if it was the other way around.
No. Mm-mm. That's the way NBC's been doing it. And ABC's sort of done that as well. But CBS is shot to shot to shot to shot. Let's go to 16. All right, boom. They're done with the shot. All right, let's go to 11.
See, I like what ABC and ESPN's done with the British Open. I see that as, except for the last hole on Sunday, I've always seen shot to shot to shot with them.
Yeah. I mean, the way to do it. That's five 5 minutes, and we've watched all 5 minutes. And he's going to take out a 7-iron. It's about 174 yards. And the rough is 6. And, well, he's backing off the shot now. Meanwhile, in the background, you hear, whoa, whoa. Yeah, he's cheering at all the other holes. We're concentrating on some guy agonizing for 5 minutes over a shot.
Now let's go to the tape of what happened 3 hours ago.
This is how we got here. Notice the action back.
Who?
Andy Wright.
Who is it that CBS always had in following their A group? Oh, I can't remember his name.
Group. They used to have Bob Rosberg, Judy Ryan.
He was he would always follow the A group, and he was in Happy Gilmore as well. Or no, I'm sorry, not Happy Gilmore. It was Tin Cup.
Well, they had McCord out there.
McCord, that's the one. Gary McCord.
Yeah, but he's banned from the Masters for one thing. So he can't announce the Masters.
Oh, okay. I knew there was an issue, but I didn't remember what it was.
Yeah, he's on the ban list because it referred to the greens as having bikini wax on them.
Right.
Yeah, they didn't like that. Jack Whitaker was banned because he called the gallery a mob.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That's why that's small and insignificant.
That's why you hear them always refer to them as the patrons, because look, the Masters has everybody over. Everything is 1 year contracts. 1 year, 1 year, 1 year, 1 year.
Right.
You do it their way. There's 4 minutes of commercials an hour. That's it. You get 56 minutes of golf, 4 minutes of commercials every hour. That's how they do it. That's how they want it. They set the rules. I mean, that's a good rule, by the way. And you can maximize your dollars with limited sponsorship.
Well, the other question, I was going to say, who's paying for the majority of it now, the broadcast? Because that's not a cheap broadcast to do.
No, but they also finally relented and allowed them to show all 18 holes. Daniel Navas hit a 3-run homer. The Red Sox in the top of the ninth lead the Orioles in the Fenway opener 3-0. Top of the seventh, Milwaukee leads the Cubs in the Wrigley opener 7-2. Minnesota with a 1-0 lead on Kansas City, bottom of the second. The Yankees in the bottom of the first now lead the Indians 3-2. Terry Francona walked to Progressive Field today, got lost. St. Louis leads Cincinnati 2-0 at the end of one in the Busch opener today.
Got lost.
He did. He got lost.
That's the best. Yeah, sounds like they may be playing Tessie there on opening day at Fenway.
Good start. Buchholz has thrown a three-hitter. So they're off to a good start. Middlebrooks hit 3 home runs yesterday. So it is a good start. So tomorrow the big story will be the snapping of the sellout streak. That will be a big story tomorrow.
It'll be a big story, but like you said, it was a little bit...
It was skewed anyway.
Yeah, skewed. That's a good word to use.
I mean, I was at Fenway in May last year, and I saw empty seats up in right field. So
I want to go back to... I know we don't always do it unless there's a major, but I want to talk about golf. There's few tournaments right now that play 18 holes when there's a tie. I understand why you don't play 18 holes when there's a tie, and it's mainly because of television audience.
Yeah, it's the U.S. Open's the only one.
Right, but I would like to see every major be played as 18 holes for a tie. I just think you get shortchanged. You get shortchanged if it's a tie, and then you go to a playoff hole.
I think the drama of it's incredible.
I mean, you make one bad shot and you're done. I mean, you've played
okay.
You've played outstanding, but
Phil Mickelson played outstanding in the U.S. Open at Wingfoot until he made one bad shot in the 18th hole, the 72nd hole.
But you can still pull yourself out of it there and be in the hunt to win it on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, even Sunday if you're high enough up and you do it early enough in the round. But yet in the final, when it's tied up and you're down to head-to-head or even three guys left in the sudden death, I don't know. I understand the excitement of it. I understand the television side of it, but it's a major.
You've already played 72 holes. How many you need? 500?
And I realize this contradicts most everything I've said about how to handle overtime situations. I don't know why with golf I think it should be 18 holes to decide a champion when it's time. I don't have a reason for it.
I think it should be sudden death. He had 72 holes.
What about three? What about taking go back British to like Open Amen does, Corner?
The British Open does four.
Right. Go back
British
to
British Open does four holes.
Yeah, go back and pick maybe Amen Corner and start, you know, and play three holes for the championship or for yeah. the for the tiebreaker. I like that. At least that's better.
I'd rather see sudden death. You get to the hole, you make a mistake, you beat him, you win. Next. Let's go to South Carolina, the Heritage.
Moving on.
I'm serious. I would just rather see a sudden death playoff. I think it's more dramatic. It's more exciting. It's more intriguing. They're tied.
You don't think an entire gallery following 18 holes and only two or three or four, however many golfers, most of the time it's two, but following two guys the entire time for 18 holes, that's not dramatic?
It's Monday. Nobody's going to be there.
That's the problem. And I understand that, but that's the problem. It's Monday.
It's a huge problem.
I know, and that's why I'm willing to concede go to three holes. Go to three holes and pick three holes, like I said, Amen Corner, whatever you want.
I'd rather see sudden death.
All right, what hole do you start on sudden death?
10. Why not?
I don't think there are a lot of tournaments that will play 18 over again. I think that's dumb.
I go to 10. 10's fine.
It's not that far away from where you started. What about if you played the hardest hole by handicap and that was your sudden death starter?
Look, you got to get them there, okay? And the gallery can't, they've been followed. They're at the end now. They're all around 18 anyway. At least at 10, 10 usually is very close to the tee box at 10. Is usually relatively close to where the green is at 18.
Not far, right.
And by the way, 10 at Augusta National is a really difficult hole.
It is. It's a very good hole to start a playoff. I agree with you there.
So, look, I'm for sudden death. All right? I'm for sudden death. Get out there, win it or lose it, have a ceremony, move on.
And I'd like to see more holes, and just like that, the course is gone. I think it's in Arizona. They played it about a month ago. It's basically a stadium
hole. The one that Mickelson won, the 16th hole.
Yes, yes.
Well, the crowd goes nuts, and they boo in the whole thing.
It's the stadium hole. I mean, that's basically what it is. It's built like it's a par 3 built like a stadium. Mm-hmm. I'd like to see more of that, too.
I don't think you're going to see that at Augusta National.
No, you won't see it at Augusta National. You're absolutely right.
I can guarantee you.
They have now when they play the British Open at St. Andrews, there's some interesting holes designed similar to that. And you're going to know the holes right off the top of your head, which really disturbs me. But there's one where at St. Andrews where there's like a little canal that goes right in front of the green.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of those type of holes where they build stands around it.
Yeah, it's the 18th.
Is it 18? I couldn't remember if it was 18 or 16.
It's right after the road hole.
Okay.
It's right after the road hole where you have to hit your drive over the corner of the hotel.
Yeah, that's an entertaining one, too.
Oh, the road hole 17, that's a legendary hole.
That's an entertaining one, too.
Yeah.
Legendary. I would never be allowed to play that hole.
Nah, well, you know, I mean,
off the wall, nothing but cup.
I mean, just the members there wouldn't let you do it unless there was an entertainment factor.
How many windows would they have to replace, though?
That's right. You do have that slice.
I do have a slice.
And the road hole would not be good because you've got to keep it to the left of the hotel. And you go left or right. Okay.
That's what I said. Off the wall, off the bricks, nothing but cup.
Oh, my goodness.
No, there are some really, I mean, you always think of Augusta as being the picturesque because of the time of year it is and the way they have and the layout of everything.
Azaleas, dogwoods, gorgeous.
How many holes can you, of the 18, how many can you name?
Oh, what, at Augusta National?
Yeah.
Jeez, I don't know.
See, I like springing these things on you because you can't think ahead of time.
There's certainly some of them I can name. I mean, what do you mean, in terms of yardage?
No. In terms of the name of the hole. Yeah.
The name of the hole?
Yes.
All right. I think 18 is Holly, isn't it?
Hang on. I don't know them all either. I know one is Azalea, I think, and there is a Holly. I don't know which one.
Right. I mean,
I'm looking at it.
Well, Azalea is 13. That's a famous.
Right.
That's a famous one. But I think Holly's 18. I think Pompous is 7. I think
18 is Holly. You're correct. And you said what was 7? Pompous. Yep. That's right.
12 is Golden Bell. That's easy.
Yep, that one even I know. Azalea's 13. You had that one earlier.
Tea Olive is 1. That's where you start. Pink Dogwood is 2.
Yes.
9 is Cherry, but I think it's not just Cherry. It's like Carolina Cherry.
Carolina Cherry. Wow. I'm slowly becoming impressed.
16, of course, the par 3 is Redbud.
Redbud, right.
Let's see. Juniper is 6, Magnolia is 5.
Oh, wow. Juniper 6, Magnolia 5.
We mentioned 10. 10's Camellia.
10's Camellia. What's the start of Amen Corner?
Amen Corner?
Yeah.
What do you mean, 11, 12, 13?
Yeah, that starts with 11.
White Dogwood, Golden Bell, and Azalea.
Bingo, there you go.
Then 14 is a fir. It's,
you are correct. It's not an American fir.
Chinese, right?
There you go.
Let's see. Nandina is 17 where the Eisenhower tree is.
Yes. To the left of the fairway.
Firehorn is 15.
A cluster of pines starting them to mature on the right side of the fairway.
What don't I have? One of them is juniper. I think juniper is 6.
Well, you hit juniper.
Okay.
Yeah, you did hit juniper earlier.
Crabapple is...
That was one you're missing.
4.
Flowering crabapple, but I'll give you that one.
Okay. And
I think you're missing 3.
Flowering peach is 3.
Flowering peach and hole number 2, you did
Pink Dogwood.
There was one more
That's a par 5.
Number 8 is the only one you're missing.
Oh, that's a par 5. That's Yellow Jasmine.
Wow. See, I am not. I told you you'd be able to name many of them. I didn't know if you'd be able to pull them all, but there they are, all 18. I am deeply impressed. I wish I had winning sounds for you, and I'd play those because that was really, really impressive.
Yeah, okay, fine. Let's see.
Yeah, that was good. Nance couldn't have done it better.
No, Nance can do them 1 through 18.
Well, he's been there a few more times.
Nance can do it. Okay, we'll come back, wrap it up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKO. Scoreboard today looks like this. The Phillies will play tonight against the Mets at 7, and Roy Halladay will go tonight.
Well, wait a minute. They'll Pirates show up, but whether they play or not is a different story.
Well, they're at home at Citizens Bank tonight, and Halladay gets the ball tonight. Pirates will be at Arizona. St. Louis at the end of 2 leads Cincinnati 2-0, and Milwaukee leads the Cubs in the Wrigley opener 7-2 top of the 8th. In the American League, the Red Sox have won. Daniel Nava, 3-run homer. Clay Buchholz gets the win. Beat Baltimore 3-1. The Yankees and Indians are 3-3 in the bottom of the second at Progressive Field. Minnesota leads Kansas City 1-0 in the middle of the third. That gets you up to date.
All right. Now, we were talking about Augusta National. You've named all 18 holes by name.
Oh, God.
Now the ultimate test. What's par and how many yards?
Well, it's 72.
Par is 72. How many yards is the entire course? Within 50. Yeah, I'll give you within 50 yards.
74-30.
That's just scary. 74-35. Wow. Okay. That's just scary. Oh. Who needs a sports encyclopedia? Just call the Steve Jones Show and ask your question. It's unbelievable.
Right. That's fine.
What was it before it was a golf course?
Before it was a golf, I think it was a nursery.
Oh,
wasn't it?
Come on!
That's why they name everything down there after shrubs.
How do you know? Oh, man. I'm going to spend the rest of the week finding something that you don't know about this course. That is my goal for the week.
I just want to get to the golf course. And
what's the course record?
The course record?
Yeah. For 18.
For 18. I'm going to say 62.
That's not bad. 63. Nick Price in 86, Norman in 96.
Yeah. You know what each has in common? Neither one of them won.
They both shot a 63, but besides that, neither won, huh? Listen, I am impressed. I have to read all this stuff. You have it off the top of your head. It is kind of scary.
That's one thing I'm very proud of, being a very frightening individual. The local authorities found it to be far more frightening than me. All right. We'll talk to you tomorrow. David Jones will join us from Atlanta.